martial law governments under President Marcos. And there was a time when I didn't know whether or not when I left home, I would come back alive. And because of my involvement in campaigns. But there was, you know, with all the involvements of the campaign, there was really something about Make Poverty History that really touched my life. It's just something like you're feeling something or you're thinking something and you cannot express it. And somebody comes along and says something and they say, yes, that's what I wanted to say. You know, it's a, some sort of like somebody, if your heart were a guitar, somebody pluck a chord in your guitar and say, yes, that's the tune I've always wanted to play, and yet I couldn't, and somebody played it for me. And the reason was this. I'll take this out now. I'll open it. Because one of the embarrassments of my family, I saw Linda pass by. She didn't get in. Maybe she knows that usually when I talk, I say something that's quite embarrassing to Linda and to my kids. Make Poverty History touch me because in the previous campaigns, I always felt like I was wearing a hat when I was doing the debt campaign. And then I was doing something about another campaign, I would put another hat. There's so many hats I keep on changing. When Make Poverty History campaign was launched, it some sort of brought together a lot of very important campaigns in my life that I've been involved with, and I could campaign as me. Like, for example, at the very early stage of Christian Aid, When the Trade Justice campaign was launched, and the first time that the logo was launched, there is a bigger version. So you're all familiar with that. People ask me whether or not I was still committed to the debt campaign. So the first time I went out with my Trade Justice logo and somebody asked me whether I was still committed to the debt campaign, as soon as I arrived home, I got my soldering iron, I got my file, and ever since then, I've been wearing this. Can you see that? There's a chain on the bottom of it. And whenever anyone asks me, you are campaigning for trade justice, have you forgotten about the debt campaign? And I say, can you see my badge? I did that because somehow I said, no, I have not forgotten the debt campaign. And to my embarrassment, especially of my children, I have two bigger ones. The bling bling. And the chain. So I have a red one and I have a silver one. And sometimes to attract attention, I wear both. And when I went back to the Philippines, I met a friend. And part of her business was handicraft. And I said, Nitz, can you make me something? And she said, what? A hat, a baseball cap, printed, Make Poverty History. So this was made by a friend of mine from the Philippines, who was, her business was handicraft. And also, this is a Philippine shirt that I had made specially. It just felt that I am campaigning as me. And later on, with all the issues brought together, it was also very important because for the first time, I really said, I am campaigning as me. And when I said, I'm campaigning as me, very, very central to that identity as me is my Christian faith. Therefore, when I get involved in the campaign, I've always asked, how does this relate to what I believe? Again, it is a struggle to become one. It is a struggle to become whole. It is a struggle to become integrated in my person. So that it's really a journey, in a sense. Because when I look back now, I could actually look back and say that there were some very significant turning points in my life. And as I said before, that I was in the hit list of martial law and all that. So in the Philippines, I'm a big fish. And in my village, I'm a very, very, very big fish in a small pond. I suppose in the United Kingdom, I'm a small fish in a big pond. But because I was a big fish in a small pond, there were some people, there were some organizations who were very, very keen to get me into their organization. Even when I was as young as about 20, 22. And there was one organization that saw me and said, that person has a potential. And they invited me to a special session. And they brought us to a kind of a farm. Very relaxed weekend. A lot of discussions about the Philippine situation, about the economic, political, social structure. And then about what are the things that should be done. And at the end of the third day, I mean, it is a very, very good in a sense of it. Things went on and there was really very deep sharing. And on the end of the third day, they offered me to join their organization, their party. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't. And then one of them asked, why don't you believe in the vision? Don't you believe in the utopia? You know, for the past 3 days, we've been talking about justice, about peace, about equality, brotherhood, sisterhood, and all that. And you seem to agree with all those values, and you seem to agree with the analysis of the Philippine situation. Why can't you join us? Aren't you inspired by that dream, by that utopia? And I told them, no, I agreed with a lot of the things that we talked about. And I find that utopia you're talking about, of a classless society, yeah, there's something attractive to it, but that is not what drives me. And this was when I was about 20. And said, what then drives you? What is a dream that you have? And I happened to have my Bible with them, and I opened my Bible. And I opened Isaiah chapter 65, verses 17 to 25. Strange, when you get old, you can read better without your glasses. I can't see you without my glasses, but I can read without my glasses. For I am about to create new heavens and a new earth. The former things shall not be remembered or come to mind. Make poverty history. Let's take poverty and relegate it to history. Relegate it to the past. It's no longer true in the present. It's something that should belong to the past. That's what we want to do. Make poverty belong to the past. For I am about to create a new heaven and a new earth. The former things shall be remembered or come to mind. And then it moves on. No more shall the sound of weeping be heard in it, or the cry of distress. No more shall there be in it an infant that lives but a few days, or an old person who does not live a lifetime. Can you remember our campaigns about debt? one of the big pictures in Christian Aid in the campaign was that little baby, when the baby was born, had already a debt of $120. And when some of our colleagues from Christian Aid went to Zimbabwe to see if that child was still around, the child had died. No infant will die within a few days. So in a sense, the vision of Isaiah, chapter 11, chapter 65, talks about this new heavens and this new earth. It does not talk about health for everyone, good health. It does not talk about the idea of justice. It does not talk about peace and reconciliation. But it does not use the words, but listen to the image. Listen to the picture. Because the Bible is very descriptive. You talk about health for everyone. There shall be, no more shall there be in it that infant that lives but a few days, or an old person who does not live out a lifetime. For one who dies at 100 years shall be considered a youth, and one who falls short of 100 years will be considered accursed. That's good health for everyone, for the young and the old, for the men and the women. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. Now, if you come from the Philippines, if you've lived under martial law, you know what injustice is when you build a house, you plant a field, and the next day you are driven away because of the war. You know what injustice is. So when the Bible talks about building a house and you inhabit it, not somebody else. When you're planting something and you can harvest the fruit and not somebody else, or it doesn't get wasted, you know that it is talking about justice. They shall not labor in vain, nor bear children for calamity. For shall their offspring be blessed by the Lord. And then it does not talk about peace. But listen to this. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together. The lion shall eat straw like the ox. That is peace. That is reconciliation. It's not the absence of war. It's not the absence of dissent, especially absence of dissent because it is the fruit of fear, the silence of death. But there is real reconciliation. But what more beautiful reconciliation can there be than this? Before they will call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear. Reconciliation between human nature, humankind and the animals. Reconciliation between humankind and God. While they are yet speaking, I will hear. So that the vision of this new heaven, of this new earth, of making poverty history, not only in terms of material destitution, but in terms of social richness, cultural richness, in terms of peace, the fullness of community, that is the vision of the new heaven and the new earth. And that is why when Make Poverty History was launched, I felt I could campaign as me, not only as the debt campaigner, not only as a trade campaigner, not only for aid, not only for gender, but for me as a Christian. I felt that in this is a statement when the things that I beautifully believe, the one that's inspired me, the one that made me decide when I was 20 that I was not going to join the Communist Party of the Philippines when they tried so hard to get me, was because of this vision of Isaiah. A turning point in my life. And that is what's part of the journey. the beginning of it. And that's why I find Make Poverty History inspiring. I can wear the chain. I can wear my bling bling. I can wear my cap. I can wear my shirt. But if we're going to be committed to this vision of making poverty history, if you're going to be committed to help out in bringing into reality the new heaven and the new earth, to participate in that mission of Jesus, there must be a prerequisite, a condition without which, a perspective, a worldview, a fundamental option, that this new heaven, that this new earth can only be achieved if this prerequisite, if this condition without which must first be there. And what is that condition? When you reap your harvest in your fields and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be left for the foreigners, the orphan, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all your undertakings. When you beat your olive trees, do not strip what is left. It shall be for the foreigner, the orphan, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, do not glean what is left. It shall be for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I am commanding you to do this. This is a text that exemplifies for me so many other texts that the new heavens and the new earth can only become a reality if we, as individuals, as societies, we make a fundamental option for the poor. And I know that in our personal devotions, we are very much devoted about Jesus being poor. And I know as a kid, it was very much emphasized in sermons of the priest that I've listened to about this little babe born in a manger and dressed in swaddling clothes. Personally, I agree with some of the other biblical authors who say that it is, and it may be inaccurate to say, that Jesus was poor. It is inaccurate. In the sense that he was not a leper. In the sense that he was not a beggar. He was not a cripple. He was not one of the people that was ostracized in his society. Jesus was the son of Joseph, a carpenter. Joseph was a skilled worker. Now, if you are in the Philippines and you are a carpenter, a skilled worker, you cannot be poor. You can earn something. And I believe that in Jesus' time, when Joseph was that, they were not rich, but they were not destitute. So in their society, Jesus could be considered actually an average middle class in that context. And it is in this that's why I understand why Jesus was unacceptable to the rich and the powerful. Because although he was not a destitute, he chose to be identified with those who were marginalized and ostracized by his society. And Jesus became a living witness of what inclusive love is. If you love a friend, if you love somebody who is like you, that's not going to challenge society. But if you dare to touch the untouchable, if you dare to love the unlovable, your fellow, your peers will reject you. Because you become a living witness that would question their decision to live according to the mores of society to keep that kind of stratification of society. Jesus chose to be poor. Jesus chose to be identified. And that's why he became a thorn. There is this fundamental option. And this fundamental option for the poor, it reads to the gospel. I don't know if in years past, I don't know if you've heard Jim Wallace has come, he's been invited in past Greenbelts. And when he was a student of theology, he and his friends took a Bible and they cut out in the Bible everything that had the word poor or poverty, that reference. And they showed it to one of the teachers and they said, it doesn't make sense. If you take out poverty or being poor in the Bible will not make sense. It is so central. So this preferential option for the poor, for me, is a prerequisite that we all need as individuals, as society, if we are going to make poverty history. And then what are the implications then? If as a society, as individuals, we are committed to make poverty history. So it's not talking so much of the Bible, but taking a look at the campaign, are the three things about the campaign: debt cancellation, trade justice, more and better aid. Are they consistent with the scriptures? It's not so much about text, but rather themes. But I chose one particular text. Every seventh year, you shall grant remission of debts. We are all hopefully been very familiar with the Jubilee Debt Campaign, when that was the focus of our campaign. So the whole scriptural text about Jubilee is there. It's very rich. The reason why I picked this particular text every seventh year, because for, I think, a number of us, there was a time when people you ask about, you're talking about campaign, and people would ask, where were you in 1997? Was it 97? No. 98. And it refers to the time when 70,000 people, mainly from the churches, gathered together in Birmingham to form a human chain when the leaders of G8 met in Birmingham. And I picked this text because 2005 is the seventh year of Birmingham. And that's why 2005 in Edinburgh, I think, was quite significant for me, because it was 7 years, the Sabbath, after the Birmingham incident. And in a sense, I think for campaigners now, the Birmingham incident was overshadowed. Because I think people will ask now, where were you in July 2nd, 2005? I had to go to the Philippines for some work in June. And I made sure that I was going to be here before July the 2nd. Because I didn't want to miss July the 2nd. Because I thought people would ask me, Romy, where were you in July the 2nd? And I didn't want to say I was in the Philippines. I wanted to say I was in Edinburgh, wearing my shirt, wearing my cap, and carrying a banner from the Philippines which said, yes, make poverty history. So debt cancellation is one of that implications, because that's one of the themes you find in the scriptures. So that I can see a consistency between the campaign for debt cancellation and the Jubilee campaign. There are so many texts in the scriptures. I just chose this one. Hear this. You that trample on the needy and bring to ruin the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over, so that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath, so that we may offer wheat for sale? We will make the ephah small and the shekel great, and practice deceit with false balances, buying the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, and selling the sweepings of the wheat. Again, this is one of the many texts that demands justice in trade. So the demand for trade justice is something very consistent with the demands of our faith. So that it is a living out of that commitment of what we believe in the new heaven and the new earth, in the mission of Jesus, to be committed to the trade justice campaign. Again, it is a theme that we can see and read in the scriptures. And then what about more and better aid? What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? It talks about helping those in need. It is about aid. It is about aid that really makes a difference. So again, it is a theme that we have in the scriptures about what it means to give, to this generosity to give. Using Jesus as a model, when Jesus gave, he didn't only give something he owned, a thing. He emptied himself. It was this self-emptying of Jesus that is the real model of what giving is. The giving of things, the giving of money is only part of that symbol. And that is why if our heart is so much focused on the things that we own, then we are unable to share. But if our hearts are full of God, it's loving God and loving neighbor, then we are able to share from what we have. Because we don't identify who we are to what we have. There's always a danger that the things we own begin to possess us. And we cannot let go. We cannot part with our money. We cannot part with this. We cannot part with that. Because our identity somehow becomes destroyed when the things that we own are taken away from us, because somehow we have identified ourselves, who we are, with what we own. So that the real this thing about giving and aid is, that's why we're campaigning for more and better aid. It's not to give so that we can get back. It's this real altruistic giving. So I can see that the three focus of the Make Poverty History campaign: debt cancellation, trade justice, and aid, more and better aid, are consistent with my faith. That in some of the commitment to make poverty history as a living out of who I am in my fullness, not being compartmentalized by different campaigns, but being whole and integrated, but integrated also with who I am. And very much part of that who I am is what I believe, the Christian faith. Now, we cannot overemphasize justice, because even when we're speaking of debt, we're not asking about charity. We're asking about giving justice. Why should the poor who had no, especially the poor in Latin America or the Philippines, who had no role at all, in the loans that were made by the dictators, why is it that they are the ones who are being made to pay for that debt by the reduction of services? We campaigned against debt in the Philippines, and because of that, Marcos hounded us, and yet the Filipinos of my generation, They are the ones who are paying now for the price of that debt. So it's a question of justice. And also in trade, that's justice. And even in aid, that's a question of justice. It's not just about charity. So we cannot overemphasize the need for justice. And again, the Bible is so full of that. Again, just very, very few quotes from the scriptures. I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I shall not accept them, and the offerings of well-being of your fatted animals I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps. But let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. How important justice is to the Lord. And that is from Amos. And from Proverbs, a line, speak out, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and the needy. The demand for justice, which is, and God's justice, is an option for the poor. It is to protect the marginalized, the most vulnerable. And one of the most beautiful quotes from Luke, again, borrowed from Isaiah. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Again, we cannot overemphasize the need, the centrality of justice in the campaign. And lastly, another question that I've asked myself in this journey is this.